The matter of Brenda Gilbert versus Kenyatta K. Stewart Esquire et al. May we please have appearances of counsel?
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Michael Confusian of Hagee & Confusian on behalf of Brenda Gilbert.
Good afternoon. Juliana Blackburn on behalf of the respondents, Kenyatta K. Stewart and the law firm of Hunt, Hamlin & Ridley.
Welcome, counsel. Mr. Confusian, please go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'd like to ask for 2 minutes of rebuttal, if I may. It's a very narrow issue on causation in this legal malpractice case, as the court knows. My position is that the defendant attorney was not entitled to summary judgment on the proximate cause issue because a reasonable jury can find that the attorney's conduct was a substantial factor in Ms. Gilbert's ultimate harm, being suspended from her job and her job demotion. Now, the trial and the appeal court basically said, well, the proximate cause element failed on plaintiff's case on summary judgment because they said the only testimony in the case, and they were referencing Mr. Bailey, I believe, who was in the judiciary branch, was that the plaintiff was demoted because of her lack of candor and not reporting the tickets in the first place in a timely fashion, they said in other phrases. I guess I would say two things about that if I could. One is, under Brill, when you look at the summary judgment record, of course, you have to look at it in the light most favorable to the plaintiff. And the trial court and the appeal court's conclusion that the only testimony was she was demoted for lack of, for her timing, is just not in, it's not supported by the record. If you look at Mr. Bailey's deposition, for example, on page A246 of my appendix, at A257, A261 and A267, I think, are the critical pages. If you look at those pages, Bailey, while he does say, oh, we were concerned she didn't timely report it to us, but Mr. Bailey also talks about that Ms. Gilbert made, he said, misrepresentations in the municipal court, that she said that Attorney Stewart only represented her husband and the tickets were only against her. Which, of course, at that time of Mr. Bailey's deposition, yeah.
Sorry to interrupt. Was there ever a retainer agreement? Did your client ever interfere in behalf of Mr. Stewart Kenyatta ever enter an appearance on behalf of your client at any court anywhere?
Yeah, he entered his appearance by letter, I believe, in March of 2014, maybe about 6 weeks before the May 6th hearing. And then he entered it again, Your Honor, at the municipal court hearing on May 6th. He said he appeared before Brenda Gilbert at that hearing, but he didn't have a written retainer agreement. And obviously he operated under a conflict of interest.
Don't you have an issue with the first element of Conklin? Attorney-client relationship?
No, you mean in terms of my client's claim for damages?
Yes.
No, because
Conklin the first thing Conklin requires, as I recall, is attorney-client relationship. Before you get the breach of duty, before you get to the loss of a redeemable loss of a cause of action.
Yeah, he clearly had an attorney-client relationship. He operated in the municipal court on Brenda Gilbert's behalf. He entered a letter, although it's not in the actual appendix, it appears he entered March 25th, 2014 letter to the municipal court where he said, I represent Brenda Gilbert. And the May 6th hearing of the transcript, which is in the appendix, shows he entered his appearance. And in fact, he answered for Brenda Gilbert saying she was guilty of these two charges. So no, Your Honor, I think the record clearly shows there was an attorney-client relationship. There shouldn't have been because he was obviously already representing the ex-husband, Mr. Gilbert. So that was really the crux of the problem that I think he did. But from a standpoint of a civil lawsuit against the man, no, my client clearly had an attorney-client relationship within the context of Conklin or any other law in New Jersey. Keep going, Judge?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So in any event, I think from a summary judgment standpoint, if you look at the causation element, a jury could clearly find that plaintiff's claim delay in reporting the municipal court issue was not solely the cause of her ultimate harm in being demoted or losing her or being suspended for 50 days. because Mr. Bailey clearly talks about, he says her conduct was egregious. This is at A261. He points to everything contained in her major disciplinary notice, which encompasses much more than just the timing question. If you look at A267, he says, I don't believe her. In other words, it wasn't just the problem of that she didn't timely report. It was the issue, was wrapped up, in other words, in the entire municipal court proceeding, which of course was caused in the first place, my client alleges, by the attorney Stewart's conflict of interest laden representation.
Mr. Confucione?
Well, yeah.
Just to put a point on the argument that you're making right now.
Sure.
It seems that Mr. Bailey faulted your client for announcing her probation position before the court, when in fact it was Mr. Stewart. Mr. Stewart was the one, not the client, who said, by the way, she happens to be employed by probation.
Correct.
And yet she was faulted for raising that.
Correct, Your Honor. And that was one of the things that Mr. Bailey talked about that I think he was especially worried by, because he said, well, that, I guess that hints into whether or not there was favorable treatment of a judicial branch employee. And again, all of that was set in motion by Attorney Stewart's conduct, which really, if you think about it, had, so I agree with Your Honor completely, but it really had two facets, his conduct. One was, you know, he operated under a conflict of interest. I don't say this to criticize the attorney, because, you know, attorneys can do a lot of things, but he operated under a conflict of interest. But it wasn't even like it was a mistake. I think any attorney, even after one day of law school, knows you can't represent person A and then pressure person B to advantage person A, to, as he said, take the fall. He essentially told her to throw herself on the grenade for charges that she clearly was not guilty of under the statute. So the secondary... really,
before you move off, Mr. Confucione, yeah. I understood that argument was because right from the get-go there was problem with the way in which his loyalty to her was affecting his representation of her interests. There's but some, at least an argument for but-for causation that led to a spiraling series of events that affected her job.
Sure.
At least that's how I understood that part of your argument, correct?
That's correct, Judge.
Mr. Confucione, clarify something, please, for me.
Sure.
Your client was disciplined in part for certain things that were unrelated to the municipal court matter and admitted wrongdoing in those respects, driving a vehicle, a state vehicle, while a suspended license, misuse of parking, and those sorts of things. Is your argument that but for defendant's conduct, all that conduct that she admitted to unrelated to defendant would not have come to light? And if so, isn't that a bit attenuated on proximate cause?
Yeah, I think that that plays into the proximate cause. I think the way the case proceeded below, that was never really played out. But I guess my argument would be that even if you didn't go with a but-for causation analysis, the argument is that the conduct of Attorney Stewart, one, in entering into the conflict representation, but also beyond that, in kind of failing to advise the plaintiff about what the effect was going to be on her employment. Because if you look at some of the record materials, she does say in her statement of material facts, well, he didn't tell me what kind of consequences I was going to have. He basically said to her, take the fall and you'll just be able to pay fines and he'll reimburse you. But there obviously were more consequences of that. So I guess a long way around to answer your question, Judge, I think those elements about, let's say there's six things that were cited in Mr. Bailey's notice of disciplinary action. I think at some point a jury would have to, you know, facet out what effect Kenyatta Stewart's wrongful conduct, whether it was a negligence or intentional, had on producing the ultimate harm to her of the 50-day suspension and demotion. But again, I don't think that could be properly resolved on the summary judgment record as we sit here. He might be able to argue, for example, let's say he did the same thing, Mr. Stewart did the same wrongful conduct, but instead of these other little driving without a license matters, let's say she was she stole from the trust fund in the judiciary and got caught stealing funds. Then I think you could probably come close to arguing that, well, I did something wrong as an attorney to defend an attorney, but my action didn't actually cause your ultimate harm.
Mr. Confucian, this is related to the Chief Justice's question and perhaps my not full understanding of the record. We do know that your client's former husband was going up to the mailbox and taking out all of the parking tickets. What I cannot tell from the records is whether or not he was taking out of the mailbox notices of suspension and whether or not your client even knew that she was suspended at the time that she was using the state vehicles. Is the record clear on that?
There's no answer to that question at this point, because I think it was resolved on that narrow issue of the timing and the lack of proximate cause on that. None of those other things are resolved by the record. They would have to be going forward. But I think my overall point, focusing squarely on this case, my overall point would be, this is not the kind of a case where the defendant attorney should be able to be resolved as a matter of law and summary judgment.
I understand your earlier effort at trying to distinguish the wrongs that I understand she admitted to from a much more egregious wrong. But yeah, is there a question as to whether she committed wrongdoing? I thought that she admitted to those elements of misconduct unrelated to the municipal court piece.
No. Well, unless that was resolved in the settlement of the matter, because if you remember, Your Honor, I know that we're only focusing on the one attorney, and I'm not going to get into the other attorney. But if you remember, when it first came to light, I think it was Mr. Bailey said, we want her terminated. Then she hired this other lawyer, and ultimately a settlement was in place where they agreed to have her step down in title. She was basically demoted, and she lost like 50 days on a suspension. But so none of those things are really played out by the record in terms of it wasn't resolved.
Do you correct me if I'm wrong? I thought her motor, I may be wrong. I thought her license was suspended for something not related to her husband's tickets. And it was during that suspension that she was driving a state car for which she was disciplined. It had nothing to do with the municipal court matter in which Mr. Stewart represented her. Am I wrong?
Yeah, you're wrong, Your Honor, in terms of it was, well, you're right in this sense, Judge. It was listed, I saw on the notice of discipline in that, the Woodland Municipal Court issue that we have here was listed first. But there was, at the end, there were two things that were not related to Attorney Stewart's matter. They were like totally separate things. I think the problem is, we don't know whatever happened with that. It wasn't played out, and it's not reflected in the summary judgment record as to what impact those two unrelated things had on the overall result, which was the demotion and the suspension. But I would say this, if you read the Bailey's deposition transcript, and again, looking at it under Brill, it's clear that the motivating factor for Mr. Bailey to seek her termination was because of the things she did wrong in the Kenyatta Stewart matter. So my argument is that all of that is a factual issue on causation for the jury. I guess I would say this too, just from a kind of a legal concept. You know, in a sense, it seems to me that the trial and the appeal court is essentially trying to say, and what the defendant is really trying to argue is that, you know, Attorney Stewart's conduct had no causation at all for her demotion and suspension, that her timing issue, in other words, her delay in reporting the municipal court matter, was the sole cause as a matter of law of her suspension.
One of the questions that arises is whether if she had gone to her supervisor, even if it was 30 days later, and said, you know, my husband was driving my car, getting all these tickets, kept it from me. And I went to municipal court and all the charges were dismissed. Would everything that flowed afterward have truly occurred?
Clearly not. I mean, it's just any attorney looking at Mr. Bailey's deposition. The thrust of what he said was, I don't believe her. She's a, you know, he called her conduct egregious. If it was, if it really was purely a question of a 3-week delay, would he have come to those conclusions? No. I mean, and that was resolved on summary judgment. So, you know, I think, you know, in duty to my client, my first goal is to say, hey, she should have at least gotten to a jury trial on this element or on these claim, on this claim against Attorney Stewart. But I guess from a legal standpoint, the only other thing I would try to say is that, and this is really up to the court, but in some way, they're trying to say that the trial and appeal court and Mr. Stewart's lawyer is trying to argue, well, you know, the timing, the whatever conduct my client did in terms of delay, that that somehow is like an intervening cause that extinguishes his liability.
Right. Let me raise another issue with you. And I want to see what your response is.
Yeah.
Since Mr. Stewart undertook her representation in the way that he did he owe her the obligation, since he was doing this, to be making inquiries about her employment and therefore what her obligations were that she had with respect to employer concerning the charges?
Go ahead. Totally. I totally agree. He really did two things wrong from a conceptual standpoint. The first was, I mean, I guess it's negligence, but honestly, you know, the way he represented the two interests, and not only did a conflict of interest representation, but he pressured somebody who obviously was not guilty to, as he said, take the fall. I mean, I don't know if that's even negligent. That's like borderline wrongful conduct by a lawyer. But putting that aside, if he was going to do the two representations, then he, as your honor suggested, at least owed her a duty to say, and by the way, you know, what's your job, which you already knew, because he stated that he knew she worked in the judiciary. He should have said, you got to make sure we don't get in trouble with your job. He said, oh, you'll just have to pay a couple fines and we'll reimburse you. So even from
the argument on the other direction, Mr. Contruzioni, is that disclosure requirements are not, it's not a legal concept. It's a requirement imposed within the judiciary and obviously in many other workplaces as well. And she had the knowledge of that. It's not like saying to a client, you know, explaining to a client what summary judgment's about. It may not even have occurred to him that there were these requirements. So is that really your strongest point?
No. And I think fairly.
Mr. Confusione, to add on to what Justice Patterson just said, under Baxter versus Riola, ethics violations are not negligence per se and malpractice. They may be evidence of negligence at some point, but they're not negligence per se. You agree with me on that?
Yeah, I agree with you on that, Judge.
So, Mr. Confusione, just to throw in, to basically pivot off Justice Patterson's very good question and comment. But one of the roles, tell me if I'm off about this, one of the roles of counsel is to protect the client against himself or herself. I mean, they may have knowledge, but that doesn't mean that the attorney isn't there to guide the client from making mistakes once the attorney has undertaken to look after the best interest of the client. Go ahead.
Agreed. And I think the court said that in the Conklin case when it said you can't really use, you know, concepts of contributory negligence. I guess the way I would phrase it, though, is more in terms of intervening cause of action, especially in a context of a lawyer-client relationship. This was not an independent intervening act by Mrs. Gilbert. This flowed directly from his initial malpractice in the first place, because he set the whole thing in motion. She wouldn't have been in this position but for the things that he did wrong in the first place. So, and again, I think all of that has to come at it at a jury trial, not resolved on summary judgment. Unless the court has anything further, I know that the court understands the issues, and I think my position is fairly straightforward.
Thank you.
Thank you for hearing the case, Your Honors.
Thank you. May it please the court. I've been practicing 23 years and today is my first time appearing before you. So I'm very honored and I thank you for this opportunity. Our position is that the conduct and the actions of Mr. Kenyatta Stewart did not proximately cause the damages that plaintiff has been asserting in this case, which was the 50-day suspension and the demotion from supervisor to senior probation officer. The plea to the traffic tickets in the Woodland Municipal, the Woodland Park Municipal Court did not cause the disciplinary charges that were brought against Ms. Gilbert. It was the failure to report. I'd like to take a step back and just advise the court a little bit about the history. First of all, Mr. Stewart is familiar, had a familial relationship with Ms. Gilbert and her husband, Mr. Monroe Gilbert. And he tried to help a friend in municipal court by entering his appearance on behalf of two defendants, which was a mistake. And here we are today. So the first time that Ms. Brenda Gilbert was aware that she had tickets against her was on April 14th, pursuant to her testimony in the deposition, which was the night before the first appearance in the municipal court, which was on April 15th, April 14th of 2014. She testified that Mr. Gilbert, her husband, her ex-husband, called her and said that she needed to be in the municipal court the next day over some traffic tickets. On the 15th, she appeared at the municipal court with Mr. Gilbert, and Mr. Stewart was there. At that time, she was called and she advised the judge that she did not know what these tickets were about, but she knew on that date that there were tickets against her. So the court adjourned this matter to May 6th. What did Ms. Gilbert do? Did she report it on the 15th? Did she report that she had tickets on the 16th, the 17th, the 18th? She did none of that, despite the fact that Ms. Gilbert has been an employee of the judiciary since 1994 and has been promoted at least twice. And there's the record shows that she was given the policies and procedures for which she signed a few times during her career as an employee of the Passaic Vicinage Probation Department, that she is aware that if she is involved in any criminal or quasi-criminal litigation, that she must notify the judiciary. And this was made very clear by Mr. Bailey's testimony in his deposition, that this is something they take so seriously because the AOC is very careful in its employees and the appearance of impropriety and conflict of interest issues, which is why they require all their employees to report whether it's traffic tickets, whether it's landlord-tenant, whether it's child support, whether it's family law, it has to be reported. In fact, there's evidence in the record that Ms. Gilbert had availed herself from that in two prior situations. She testified that she once before notified the judiciary that her son was involved in a child support matter in the Passaic Vicinage. And then she notified again regarding her daughter having a child support matter in the vicinage. So she's aware because she's utilized this system of self-reporting when you have pending litigation. So Ms. Gilbert returned to court on May 6th, at which time she asserts that somehow Mr. Stewart forced her to take the plea, to take the fall, and have her husband walk away with nothing. That those facts are in dispute. Mr. Stewart, in his deposition, denies that, but she says that she was forced. I also like to bring to the court's attention that despite the fact that Ms. Gilbert has been working in the court system since 1994, she also has a master's degree. She testifies she has a master's degree. So this is not someone that is a completely a lay person concerning court proceedings. So she goes to court on May 6th. She pled guilty to certain tickets, at which time, if the court reviews the municipal court record, the court was ready to take her license away. In fact, Judge Damiano made a statement on the record that she's never seen so many traffic violations in a jacket. And she asked Mr. Stewart, what what should I do? What do you say to avoid me taking her license? And Mr. Stewart argued on her behalf and her license was saved. So the consequences were to pay some fines and probation, at which time the testimony from Mr. Stewart was that Ms. Gilbert advised him that she could do it through her church. And he repeated that to the judge. The judge asked her, you can do probation through your church? And she said, yes, knowing full well that probation, anything by probation has to be monitored by the Department of Probation of the very vicinage that she works for. And Woodland Park is in the Passaic County. Furthermore, after that, did she report it to her employer? No, she did not. The testimony and the evidence in the record from the notice of disciplinary action, it took from May 6th to May 21st to first alert her employer that she was involved with some tickets in the Woodland Municipal Court and that they were not her tickets, that they were her husband's tickets, and they opened up an investigation. This is not a situation that her plea of guilt to the tickets opened up some random investigation against Ms. Gilbert. This was something that she reported, and once she reported, she advised that she had already pled guilty to the ticket, which defies the very nature of reporting before you plead guilty.
Hey, counsel, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Are you suggesting that your client did not engage in professional misconduct before the municipal court?
Absolutely not.
So so you are conceding that your client could not represent the husband and the former wife, or the former husband and the former wife, correct?
Yes, I agree with that.
And tell me if I'm mistaken, Mr. Gilbert was paying for Mr. Stewart, correct?
That's correct.
So Mr. Gilbert is paying Mr. Stewart so Mrs. Stewart could plead guilty to the charges that were racked up by Mr. Stewart. Am I right about that?
Well, yes and no, in that this decision was agreed by a conversation in the hallway.
Tell me how that could conceivably have been in Mrs. Gilbert's interest to start pleading to a raft of parking tickets that were collected by her husband and that were surreptitiously taken out of the mailbox so that she would have no knowledge about it.
Well,
tell me how that was in her interest, as he was supposed to be protecting her interests.
No, it's not in her interest. I agree, Justice Alvin. However, in the record, Ms. Gilbert testified in her deposition that she had no firsthand knowledge that, in fact, Mr. Gilbert was the one taking the tickets out of the mailbox. That's in her. That's in the deposition transcript. So this assertion.
It's okay. Mm-hmm. This is a summary judgment.
That's correct.
Okay? So at least at this stage, we have to look at the evidence in the light most favorable to Mrs. Gilbert, draw all the favorable inferences. And one of the favorable inferences has to be that the only person with an interest in sneaking out those parking tickets is Mr. Gilbert. Would you say that's a fair inference?
I don't know, Judge, because there was a house full of people. She testified that her children also racked up a lot of tickets in the past, which caused her license to be suspended during the period of time that Justice Solomon was asking about, which was 2013, during the time that she was borrowing the vehicle from the state, during the time that her license was suspended, which is unrelated to the Woodland Municipal Court. She testified that she racked up tickets that dealt not just with her husband, with her children as well.
Let's put that aside. Let's get back to the municipal court. You agree that your client had an ethical obligation to look after her interests, correct?
he had an ethical duty to represent Mr. Gilbert and to not enter into a conflict of interest situation with Mr. Gilbert's ex-wife. He should have never represented both parties.
That's right. And he pled. He actually was the one who pled Mrs. Gilbert guilty. He was the one who spoke up. There wasn't even a colloquy between the court and Mrs. Gilbert. When he was asked, how do you plead? Your client said, guilty. Am I correct?
That's correct. That's correct. But all of this was not on the spot. This was only, there was testimony in the case that they decided collectively that the reason she should plead guilty to some of the tickets was because she did not want Mr. Gilbert's license to be suspended, so that she didn't want to be driving him around. That is in the record. But that being as it may, it doesn't excuse that Mr. Stewart entered into a conflict of interest situation by trying to help out two parties.
Because if he was looking after her interests, if she had separate counsel, the attorney would have said, under no circumstances are you to plead guilty to his crimes, to his offenses or his violations. That's what should have happened, and that's what didn't happen here.
That's correct. However, the problem is that, I mean, well, not the problem. The issue is that during summary judgment, the court made an analysis of Mr. Stewart's conduct and the undisputed facts in this case and the record. The court found that there was an attorney-client relationship creating a duty. And the court found that Mr. Stewart did breach that duty. However, where the plaintiff foundered was that as a result of the breach of that duty, what happened to her regarding her demotion and the demotion and the suspension is not causally related to the actions of Mr. Stewart, because Mr. Bailey unequivocally testified that the reason the disciplinary notice was filed against her was her failure to report. And then upon further investigation, it opened up a can of worms.
Okay,
for
so I'm looking at the summary. One of the things that Mr. Bailey spoke about, and this was in response to your questioning, and I'm looking at A257 of the appendix. And I'm just going to quote from it. So when she mentioned to the judge that she was a team leader in probation in Passaic, and it's dot, dot, dot. And when, so that's Mr. Bailey. But if you look at the municipal court transcript, it is your client who mentions that she was employed by probation. She did not initiate that conversation. Your client did. And then she got blamed for it by Mr. Bailey.
Yeah, that's a separate issue regarding Mr. Bailey and the employment hearing. Mr. Bailey testified in his deposition that when she failed to report it and her story wasn't quite jiving, he went and pulled the transcript from the Woodland Municipal Court. He actually heard the recording of what transpired. And so he got the benefit of reviewing the transcript. So I don't know why he came to the conclusion that she was using her position to try to get an advantage regarding whatever fines and penalties it was going to be. But the truth of the matter is that this is an employee of the judiciary that knew from the very start, this is not someone that started a year ago, that she had a duty to report and she didn't report it. And the only testimony and evidence in this case is that the plaintiff was demoted because her lack of candor in not reporting the tickets to begin with. She reported after she pled guilty, which defeats the fact of the notification, is what landed her in hot water with her employer. That has nothing to do with Mr. Stewart's representation.
What we perhaps don't know, and I don't know whether or not a jury could figure this out, is if she went to municipal court and all the charges were dismissed and she reported to his supervisor, you know what, I was wrongly charged on these parking tickets, that were racked up by my husband. They were all dismissed. And then she reported it 3 weeks later, whether or not anything would have gone further.
Well,
do we really know the answer to that, even on the summary judgment record?
Well, Judge, I'm sorry, Justice Albin, the truth of the matter is that the tickets were not caused by Mr. Stewart. The minute that she knew she had tickets, even before Mr. Stewart's involvement, she had a duty and an obligation to report it to her supervisor, because the supervisor would have brought it to the assignment judge to see if these tickets should remain in Woodland Park, which is in Passaic County, or should we transfer these out. But she pled guilty. That whole conflict of interest and other issues that the judiciary is so mindful of went out the window when she pled guilty. And then they opened up an investigation in whereby Mr. Bailey found out that she wasn't being truthful in that she said her husband got the tickets. When she was interviewed by Mr. Bailey, Mr. Bailey testified that she told him that the tickets were not against her, were against her husband, which in fact, number one, Mr. Gilbert was no longer her husband. He was an ex-husband, so it wasn't a husband. And she did have tickets against her. And then on top of that, they pulled her driver's abstract and found out that she was driving the state-owned vehicle during periods of time that she was suspended and had prior litigation in another municipal court, which was the Elmwood Park Municipal Court in 2012, and didn't report that either. So the reality is—
Can I come back to the question I asked Mr. Confusione? Because yes. I think he just touched on it. The tickets in Elmwood were tickets to her where she was charged with motor vehicle violations and for which her license was suspended, correct?
Her license was not suspended as a result of the Woodland Park Municipal
Court. No, listen.
Oh, sorry, I'm sorry.
She committed motor vehicle violations herself for which she was charged and which were heard in Elmwood Municipal Court. And that resulted in her license suspension. Her license suspension. Am I right about that?
Yes. And also for failure to—
Hold on. That has nothing to do with the Woodland Park Municipal Court matter, correct?
That's correct.
And it was that license suspension that she was driving the state car on that resulted in her discipline.
That was an additional charge in the discipline because she was disciplined for multiple reasons. That was one of the—
I understand. Yeah. One of them was that she was driving while suspended, driving a state car while suspended. And that suspension was as a result of municipal court charges in Elmwood that were her charges, her violations, and her adjudication, correct?
That's correct, because the suspension was in 2013. Mr. Stewart didn't represent until 2014 in the Woodland Municipal Court.
Understood. And it was always Mr. Bailey's contention, and he said that nothing, those Elmwood violations were a problem and a separate problem. But he said and testified she was not disciplined for the municipal court charges in Woodland. She was disciplined only for the failure to report, correct?
That's correct. And in fact,
it was after she told them what happened in Woodland some 15 or so days later that they pulled her abstract and found out about Elmwood, which she never reported.
That's correct. And Mr. Bailey clearly testified that the convictions in the Woodland Municipal Court were of no moment because he interpreted it as these are just traffic tickets. It was the failure to report, not the conviction that generated this discipline against her. It was not the traffic
tickets. This was after they knew now about what happened in Elmwood, about the charges in Elmwood Municipal Court, about the finding of guilty in Elmwood Municipal Court, and of the driving while suspended, in fact, driving a state car. This was found out it was prosecuted, disciplinary proceedings began at the same time as the Woodland Municipal Court matter.
Yeah, those tickets are the Elmwood Park. The Elmwood Park
disciplinary matter subsumed all of these Woodland and Elmwood Municipal Court issues, none of which were reported timely.
That's correct. And they were made part and parcel of this disciplinary action of against Ms. Gilbert.
And they litigated the disciplinary findings, but ultimately reached a settlement on that, correct?
She never went to trial. She took with another attorney, she was able to negotiate an agreement to keep her job because they wanted her fired. Mr. Bailey testified that they wanted to terminate her.
There was a settlement.
Right. Yes, there was, Justice Solomon.
Ms. Blackburn, I grabbed the appendix to follow up on my question to Mr. Confucione earlier, and I'm looking at the notice and at the settlement itself. And I was operating under a misapprehension earlier. It does not appear that the settlement covered the driving while suspended or the misuse of a parking pass, numbers 4 and 5, because I'm looking at 8277, which says the employee admits to conduct unbecoming, neglect of duty, and other sufficient cause. It does not have her admitting to the charge of misuse of public property, including motor vehicles. So I think that part of the case is not here. We're talking about, as Justice Solomon began his question, on the failure to report. Except as a given that there are hundreds of these notice of involvement that are submitted in the judiciary every year. It stands to reason that ones that are more minor do not result in a 50-day suspension. Is it, as a result, quite likely that this matter should go to a jury? Because this extreme penalty has been imposed for the failure to report. Contrast that with the hypothetical report Justice Albin posed earlier. If she'd come in a month later and said, you know, my husband racked up all these tickets and I just want you to know about them, I had no responsibility. I've been absolved of all responsibility.
It's not the problem. The issue is that Mr. Bailey, the HR supervisor, testified that it was her lack of candor that caused her to get disciplined. It wasn't anything else. It wasn't the conviction. And if you notice on the notice of disciplinary action, there's actually no charge regarding being convicted in the Woodland Municipal Court. So, and the only testimony and evidence in this case is that she was demoted and suspended because of her lack of candor. And then it opened up other investigations, but everything else additional has nothing to do with Mr. Stewart. Whatever they uncovered after the Woodland Municipal Court regarding Elmwood Park, regarding the parking pass, regarding everything else, that has nothing to do with Mr. Stewart's representation.
I'm suggesting to you, when you compare the settlement agreement and the notice,
yes,
it looks like there's no responsibility on her part as part of this settlement agreement for the driving while suspended, for the misuse of the parking pass.
Yes, because according to the deposition of Mr. Bailey, he testified that he was back and forth with Mr. Addis regarding negotiating a settlement for her. And I guess they came to this agreement, which my client had nothing to do with. It wasn't privy to any of those negotiations.
Your client signed this, not your client, excuse me.
Counsel, can you tell me where in the record it's indicated that Ms. Gilbert was driving on the revoked list as a result of the Elmwood matter? I haven't been able to find that. I don't know why she was suspended, whether she was suspended as a result of multiple parking tickets, that were racked up by her former husband. So, I mean, I know that you've answered a bunch of questions saying yes, yes, yes to those, but where is, tell us where that is in the record.
Mr. Gilbert testified the Elmwood Park tickets were generated in 2012. And in the rec, let me just find his testimony where he testified that they were able to uncover that there were warrants and the failure to appear.
This is Mr. Gilbert testifying?
I'm sorry, Mr. Bailey.
Thought it was A255. That was in 2013.
It was, yes. 2013.
It just, I have A255. I mean, it indicates that she regularly took trips to Trenton to attend meetings. It was problematic. She was on, yeah, she was suspended.
So on page 69, which would be lines 12 through 17, it says your failure to report to management your involvement in a municipal court matter that occurred on or about November 13, 2012. That's clearly Elmwood Park. Let me just see.
May I suggest a shortcut to this?
Yes.
If you look at A277, that's the settlement agreement. Paragraph one at the bottom of the page outlines the specific charges to which she has admitted as, and quote, as set forth in the notice of major disciplinary action dated June 23rd, which takes us to A220. If you spend a little time looking at it, as I've tried to do, you end up with the failure to timely and accurately report. One, two, possibly three, the first three charges, not charges four and five. Mm-hmm. So in large measure, the matter that defense counsel was involved in was at the core of the discipline that was imposed. In light of that, why doesn't this case go to a jury?
Because Mr. Bailey testified and there was no other evidence or testimony to say that the only reason that she was disciplined was because she failed to report. Mr. Bailey testified in his deposition that the conviction of those tickets had was of no consequence, of no moment to his decision to discipline her. That's in the record, that is in his testimony, that the conviction, which is what Mr. Stewart would be responsible because he represented her and she pled guilty, the conviction itself of traffic tickets were of no moment to the discipline. It was her failure to report that she was engaged in litigation to begin with. And that is the only reason why she was disciplined. And that is why the trial court granted summary judgment, because it was undisputed and there was no other evidence to show that in addition to failure to report, there was other issues why she was disciplined. She was disciplined because she failed to report, and he testified clear as day that the convictions of those tickets were of no moment or consequence to the discipline. And then the appellate division pointed out that the only evidence and testimony concerning her discipline dealt with her lack of candor. And so, that is why, sorry, Chief Justice.
No, that's all right. Mm-hmm. Assume there's a range of discipline that would be imposed for failure to report, ranging from, you know, a criticism put in your personnel file up to a 50-day suspension. And assume that the more serious the matter that you failed to report, the greater the discipline. If that were the case, should this matter proceed to a jury trial?
No, because the reason for the discipline was the fact that she did not report it. And even if she had gotten one day of discipline or just the demotion, it was as a result of her not notifying the court as she had done in the past.
Isn't it problematic that even as there was negotiation for discipline, she still had these pending convictions because her disciplinary matter was not adjourned at her request. And she didn't get the relief, the post-conviction relief in the municipal court until after she was compelled to go through with the disciplinary agreement. So that the people who were actually carving out the discipline didn't do so with the backdrop that she was actually cleared. Is that not a factor? Should that not be a factor?
Well, it was Mr. Addis that Mr. Bailey made it clear in his deposition that he was not willing to wait. And the PCR would have vacated the convictions. However, Mr. Bailey testified that the convictions were of no moment to his decision to discipline. So with or without the PCR, the answer is the same because the conviction did not have an impact on him disciplining Ms. Gilbert. It was her lack of candor and failing to report. And that is why, well, I don't know for a fact, but the record, that is why probably Mr. Bailey was not willing to wait for the outcome of the PCR. And in the deposition of Ms. Gilbert, she had a belief that the PCR would put her back in the position, the vacation of those tickets would give her back her job. And the reality is that she was asked, well, what attorney advised you of that? Who told you that? That was her own personal belief. She testified that's what she thought. But the reality is that the conviction, that is why if the convictions were an issue, the minute she got the convictions vacated, she would have went to her supervisor, give me back my job, give me back my supervisor job. The convictions were vacated. That was not the case because the convictions were not the motivation for the discipline.
It was too late. She didn't get the post-conviction relief until after the discipline was imposed. So she could not run back and say, look, I was cleared. It was already too late. Correct?
Well, yes, but I have seen cases where, you know, people get demoted, then they overcome the reason for the demotion and they get reinstated back to their position. I've seen that happen as well. I don't know why it didn't happen here because my client did not represent her in the employment aspect of this litigation. It was
your client also did nothing to try to dismiss those charges right from the original point that they were being heard in municipal court. And in fact, acted to the exact contrary in urging her to plead to something that she didn't do to cover the former husband. I mean, this alleged malpractice goes beyond divided loyalty and, representing two people at the same time. It's acting contrary and not in the full interest of this particular client to her detriment. And that's what's being explored here. What was the extent of the detriment? I'm hearing a great delay.
Do you have another device on, Justice LaVecchia, by any chance?
No, I...
We're live streaming.
Ms. Blackburn, please go ahead.
Yes, I'm sorry, Justice LaVecchia. Could you please ask the question again?
My question, which I was focused on before, said that was focused on the fact that his alleged malpractice related to not just the divided loyalty and representing people with conflicting interests, but also a lack of moving to dismiss those charges against her for something that she didn't do right from the get-go. And then, of course, leaving her responsible for a spiraling series of events that flowed from that initial course of action taken by counsel's representation. So I know you've been focusing on the conviction, but I'd like you to focus on the fact that I believe the malpractice includes more than the fact that she pled. It's how the entire matter was handled on her behalf.
Well, I agree, Justice LaVecchia, that the way the matter was handled, it's not the most stellar day for any New Jersey attorney, but you still have to prove causation. There was a breach of duty. That's what the trial court concluded when he rendered his decision for motion for summary judgment, but it was the causation where he was having issues based on the reason why she was disciplined by the testimony of her own supervisor, who the HR supervisor, who was the person who disciplined her. And it's hard to get away from the fact of testimony from Mr. Bailey when he testified unequivocally that the convictions were of no moment regarding the discipline. And it was the discipline that caused her to get the 50-day, well, as a result of the discipline for her lack of reporting, she got the 50-day suspension and she was demoted. It wasn't because of the conviction, and that, and
I understand your position.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Other questions, anyone? Ms. Blackburn, anything you'd like to add?
What I'd like to say is that, you know, the reality is that the only testimony, the only evidence in this case regarding Ms. Gilbert being demoted and suspended, which is the damages aspect of her case, was a result of her lack of candor and that element alone. It's a difficult case to look at because the conduct of the attorney was not the best conduct, and there's conflict of interest issues for which he was disciplined by the ethics committee. He was admonished for that. And he thought he was doing friends a favor, but it turned out to be disastrous. And an ethics complaint was filed against him and he was admonished for it. But unethical conduct is not per se negligence. It's not per se malpractice. And I understand the facts of this case with Ms. Gilbert leading to tickets that belong to the husband. It's not a palatable set of circumstances, but the reality is that Ms. Gilbert was a seasoned employee of the judiciary, was familiar with the policies and procedures of what she's required to do as an employee because she's availed herself in the past of self-reporting and conveniently would not report under certain circumstances. And in this particular case, she reported after she was convicted, knowing full well that she was supposed to report it at least when she, according to Mr. Bailey's testimony, it's supposed to be done immediately once you know there is litigation. And she knew at least from April 15th of 2014 that she had tickets against her. And she didn't report it until May 21st, which was still like almost 3 weeks after she pled guilty. And that is what landed her in hot water, despite the fact that Mr. Stewart's conduct was less to be desired as an attorney that is supposed to have a duty of loyalty to the client, where the loyalties here were divergent. I concede to that. However, we can't get away from proximate cause. And in this particular case—
Well, since he undertook to represent her, why is there not an argument that in undertaking to represent her, he should have done it 100% the way a lawyer should? And he should have been making inquiries about the effect of appearing in court when she was a member of the judiciary. That is, having undertook to represent her in municipal court and to plead her guilty to these particular parking tickets, he should have been making inquiries about the impact on her employment, about appearing in court and all the other stuff, protecting herself even against her from herself. Why is that argument not on the table?
Well, Mr. Stewart, based on the record, I don't believe he had any knowledge regarding the duty to self-report. Conversely, we can also say the client should have advised the attorney, by the way, the minute I have these tickets, I'm supposed to report this to my employer and I may get in trouble.
Well, the problem is that Mr. Stewart had one mission, and that was to get Mrs. Gilbert plead guilty to Mr. Gilbert's parking tickets. So apparently he wasn't really interested, apparently, in the consequences to her. Isn't that fair to say?
No, because according to Mr. Gilbert's testimony in his deposition, they all knew each other. They were friends. They caucused in the hallway before going into the courtroom, and they planned this result. This wasn't that Mr. Stewart jumped up and went there by surprise and had her plead guilty right there on the spot. It was in the hallway. There was conversations about it. And honestly, had she not been disciplined, if she had not been, if she had not been demoted, there wouldn't be any malpractice case against Mr. Stewart regarding the convictions itself without anything else. It's because she was demoted as a result and found that because she pled guilty, that's the reason she was demoted when that wasn't the reason that she was demoted.
Ms. Blackburn, I think we have your position. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chief Justice.
Mr. Confusione, rebuttal?
Extremely briefly, I know you've had a long day, but I would just say with respect to my opposing attorney, I think there's a distortion of Mr. Bailey's testimony, as I've already pointed out in my first argument. If you just, even if the court just looks from A246 to 267, it's clear that he doesn't say it was purely a matter of timing. But we've already gone over that, so I don't want to go over that again. This issue about whether or not they knew each other, again, distorts the summary judgment record. I understand Mr. Stewart said that, but that's not what the plaintiff said. There's somewhat of the negligence part isn't really on the table, but you know, the bottom line is this: a lot of the arguments, even though we're really focused on proximate cause, but a lot of the arguments from Mr. Stewart's side are to blame the client. I mean, in a case where she shouldn't have been his client in the first place, and second place, he actually told her to lie in court under oath to take, he said, take the fall for two criminal offenses that she was clearly not guilty of. So frankly, that's a pretty bad ethical breach to begin with. And superimposed on that are all the other duties, as Justice Albin said, of failing to advise the client sufficiently if you were going to put yourself in that situation. And I guess I would end with this. I think the Elmwood municipal matter, I know that we talked about that a little bit, and I understand it doesn't ultimately have anything to do with this case, but it actually is a helpful illustration. I think if Brenda Gilbert had, if Attorney Stewart had done the same thing, and the same timing and everything, same conduct, and then Brenda Gilbert wound up getting a 50-day suspension and a demotion, this charge was, because you didn't report something from this Elmwood Municipal Court, okay, and there was nothing to do with this case that Attorney Stewart represented her on, he'd be out on proximate causation. I agree. But that's not what the record of this case is. This has to be tried to a jury, and all those various arguments can be made. And unless the court has any other questions, I'd rest on that.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the matter under advisement.